hosts invitedly reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have told you turn the other cheek. And they made it with a bat, fucking protesting them cities. Told you go fight in the war, Vietnam, die good riddance. That man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around and pump crack right up for your city. And they turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And I was building your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue. One day.
Good afternoon and welcome to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines known as USA Inc. Today's date is May 21st, 2015. Glad that you could join us today on this broadcast. Again, just to repeat some stuff I said earlier, Tando Radio Show will be broadcasting tonight at 6 o'clock p.m. from 6 to 8. PM on this Thursday night. I've been looking forward to doing this program, but not for the particular topic. The topic is quote unquote Uncle Tom's, which is a label I do not use. I don't use Uncle Tom. I try to follow Mr. Neely Fuller's rules on not name calling. But we do have to, I do understand why people do engage in name calling as they try to express, perhaps some with limited vocabulary, try to express a phenomena, something that is occurring, describing an activity. But I don't get into the Uncle Tom's, and I think we do have Gus join us now on the phone. Gus, do we have you on the line? Hello? And listeners, bear with me as we are having some technical issues. Do we have you on the line, sir? Okay, it looks like that person hung up. Maybe they will try again. But we are due to be joined by Gus T. Renning of The Context of White Supremacy, which broadcasts right here on Black Talk Radio Network. Been part of the Black Talk Radio Network since, I think, 2008, if I'm not mistaken. So this interview is kind of long overdue. I can't imagine why, you know, I would not have had Gus on the program, given, you know, his work in helping to deprogram people and inform people about the system of racism and white supremacy. And I kind of think that racism and white supremacy is at work right now, because I'm starting to have all of these technical issues. These things have just been occurring in the past few days. And so I'm trying to work these things out while still talking to you, the listener. But the reason that, let me see if we can get Gus on. I got this program. I usually don't like to use Sam Broadcaster because this kind of stuff. And then when you're using Skype as well. Let me see. All right. Here we go. Maybe it'll work this time. Gus, do we have you on the line?
Yes, sir.
All right. I apologize. I know you said you was calling in, you know, on the studio line. I was trying to add you, but I suspect white supremacy is at work and trying to disrupt, you know, our broadcast abilities. That's been occurring a lot here lately. Just unexplainable things, you know what I'm saying? So I want to apologize for, you know, you having those difficulties.
Oh, no worries, no worries. All in is good.
All right. As I was just telling you, can correct me if I'm wrong, because sometimes my memory isn't always, you know, on point. But I was telling the listeners that The Context of White Supremacy came over and has been a part of the Black Talk Radio Network since 2008. Is that correct, or am I mistaken? Was it later than that?
That sounds pretty close. Or I guess 2009. Yeah, because we started out in 2007. Myself and Back of the Bus. White folks threw us off the air after about 2 months, and we had about approximately a year and a half break before we came back. So it was 2009 that we came back on the air, and I think that's when we hooked up with the Black Talk Radio Network, who has been extremely critically important in keeping the cows on the air, as white folks have continued to be very disruptive. I have lost count of how many times we've been thrown off the air. So definitely Black Talk Radio Network and Mr. Scotty Reed, they've been very helpful in keeping us on the air and keeping the content available for listeners. So we appreciate the partnership and hope it's been constructive for all.
Well, it most certainly has been constructive, but as I was also noting, you know, the long history of that relationship and collaboration in producing media, I can't think of a reason why you have not been a guest on Black Talk Radio News, because I do think I'm a regular listener of the programs. Particularly, I try to never miss a Saturday night of the compensatory call-in. And so I know the constructive things that are being discussed, what I call counter-racist programming to help black people become less confused about racism, white supremacy, and how it works. So I don't have an excuse, but you know, I just wanted to say you're welcome, and I appreciate the work that you do. So
Both ways, Mr. Reed, both ways. I appreciate the chance to discuss, and I know you all dial in to our program. I know a lot of our listeners, they're big fans of your work and always appreciate your views, so we always enjoy hearing from you and looking forward to a great exchange today.
Okay, and let's get to that exchange. Of course, I've always heard you say, you know, words are important in defining words. And right now, because I'm having those difficulties, maybe my system will allow me to access some of the web pages. It's still acting funny, so I don't want to lose you. So I'll forego and I'll just go from memory. And you could correct me if I give out incorrect information. But what was the title of your article? It was Why Honey, Uncle Tom's Will Not End Racism, I believe was the title.
Yes, sir.
Yes. And so the definition of Uncle Tom's, and I was thinking about that, and this isn't the first time I thought about it, but I think that people may be incorrectly using the word Uncle Tom. And I do know that people do change their definitions over time, or, you know, again, it leads all to confusion. But what would be your definition of how the masses are understanding the words or the phrase or the label Uncle Tom?
Well, my view, and just for clarity's sake for the folks, if you haven't seen the article, I don't use the term Uncle Tom unless I'm describing what someone else is talking about or writing about, right, or what have you. But I don't label other black people or the non-white people, period, as Uncle Tom's. And for folks who have read the piece or might read the piece, I put the term Uncle Tom's in quotation marks every time I use it, for that very reason, because I don't use that. A lot of different people have different definitions for the term, if they have a definition at all. That being said, to your question, how is the term generally used? It's my experience that frequently it will be when with how another black is responding to racism. And it can be, not necessarily, but it can be that they think this person willfully, deliberately engaging in destructive activity that is helping maintain the system of racism or working against other black people. They're doing this. They know that they're doing this. They know that this is incorrect. They know that this is harming other black people or helping racists, and they're doing it anyway. And they might even be happy to do it. They're compensated in some way by white folks. And so this qualifies them as a quote unquote Uncle Tom. That's the way that I commonly hear the term used. If I was going to give my own definition to it, and I think this is in the report, my definition would be, if you are a non-white person, black, whatever, non-white, and you comply, are subject to racist man, racist woman, in any way, shape, or form at all, you answer to them You follow their instructions. You do what you're told. You are subject to the system of white supremacy in any way. That right there would qualify you as an Uncle Tom. In my book, if you can't walk on this planet, say, hey, I don't care what white people say. I don't stop for police. I don't use their money. I don't care who they put on the $20 bill, the $100 bill. I don't have a driver's license. I don't have a passport. I have no impact on my life about anything. I go anywhere I want in the universe. I don't need a visa. I don't need a passport. Nothing. If you can't function like that in my book, you would be on the Uncle Tom list, and that would include myself. I hope that's clear.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you was clear in your definition. Now, this is what I was thinking about the other day. I think people, and I could be incorrect. I haven't had time to research it today. But it's imprinted upon my memory that Uncle Tom comes from the book by the, racist suspect white female Harriet Beecher Stowe, I think is her name, who wrote the book, Uncle Tom's Cabin, I believe is the name of it. And I've never actually read the book, but I've heard other people describe the book, and they describe the Uncle Tom character as a enslaved, black person, African descendant person who works in the enslaver's house as a house servant or whatnot, but that he worked on the inside to try to help other black people when he could, you know, without putting himself in too much jeopardy to assist them. What do you know about the character Uncle Tom? That's what I recall, but again, as I you know, said, I have not read it, but that's what I have heard. What have you heard about the actual literary character in her book?
I've read the book. It's been some years, so I don't know if I could pass a quiz on it right now, but from my memory, I think you are correct. The character, Uncle Tom's character, in this white woman's book, he was an enslaved black person. But he was trying to do as much as he could from a very weak position. He does try to do as much as he can to help, other black people, in the book, try to keep them from getting harmed and just to do as much as he can, that's constructive, for other black people in the book. I think his character ultimately, dies. That's kind of part of the conclusion, for the tale. Hope I didn't spoil it for anybody who's planning to read it. But, yeah, I think the reason that term has been used and it's had such a lasting impact is because Uncle Tom wasn't exactly he wasn't a Nat Turner, right, in the book. Like, he wasn't jumping up and down and talking about killing white people, and he was pretty nice to the white people as well. It seemed like, you know, some of them quote-unquote liked him as much as an enslaver could like someone that they're raping and killing and beating and exploiting, but he wasn't exactly rowdy with white folks. So I think that's part of why that term has been used to attack, at least verbally attack, other victims of racism in their response.
And I want to respond to that last part, but a little later. So would you agree then that based on the source or origin, because I don't think Uncle Tom has ever been used before that book came out. I don't think that was a label that was being thrown around. So do you know, based on the character and from what you told me, then I think it, you know, people are actually being incorrect. And I know why. I think I have a clue as to why, and I'll get to that later. But would you say it's accurate to say that people are misusing what a Uncle Tom, they don't understand what this character actually did?
I definitely agree. I think, 2015, we're talking about a book that, was published before the Civil War. So this is like 1850s. We're talking about a book that is, over 150 years old. Even though I did read it, I think many people are required to read this text in high school. I don't think, that every single black person or even some of the white folks that are using this term, I don't think they have an intricate knowledge of the etymology of this term and where it came from and how this character behaved in the book. I absolutely don't think that that's the case. But at least in my opinion, and this was the thrust of the article I hope that people came away with, I think use of the term at all to me it doesn't represent a misunderstanding of the term Uncle Tom. To me, it represents a misunderstanding of what racism is and how it works, because I just haven't seen any constructive value to sitting around, non-white people sitting around and branding other black people as Uncle Toms. But maybe I have missed where this has turned out a constructive result.
Okay. Now, I think that the phrase Uncle Tom was made popular by Malcolm X as he was attempting to explain what racist white supremacists were doing. And I have a clip. And so this is how, because you reference it again, I'm sorry, I can't even pull up, you know, the article because I'm afraid my system will lock up. So I'm not even going to go to our normal breaks or whatnot. But you do reference Malcolm X. And I'm gonna play this clip and then we could talk a little bit more about Malcolm X's definition of an Uncle Tom and look at what, you know, how he was, the context of how he was using that term. Cause I don't think, in my opinion, that he was using it in a derogatory fashion. He's used it a lot. So I guess, you know, we will have to look at the context of those other speeches, but this is the context of how he explained it, where he was part of a panel with racist suspects and another, black male. So this is, Malcolm X, talking about Uncle Tom's.
The white power structure today is just as much interested in perpetuating slavery as the white power structure was 100 years ago, only now they use modern methods of doing so, and realizing that the black people in this country are waking up and becoming filled with a desire to be looked upon as men and as human beings, the white power structure, to slow down that struggle for freedom and human dignity, uses tricks. 100 years ago they could do it with chains. Today they use tricks, and one of the tricks that they've invented is this token integration, to get Negro, so-called Negro leaders to accept a few token crumbs of integration that don't solve any problem for the masses of black people in this country whatsoever, but it does make the hand-picked Negroes be satisfied, to slow down the cry of the masses. And a good example of that is, as soon as the spirit of rebellion or revolution began to spread among the masses of black people in this country, and they began to take an active part, and they showed that they weren't confined to this nonviolent approach, then the government or the power structure began to sit up and take notice. And now, as you said earlier, the president is talking about new legislation and to put it, take it out of the streets and put it back in the courts. Why? As long as it's in the streets, in the hands of the masses of black people who will not compromise or who cannot be bought out. But when you put it back in the courts, then that puts it back into the hands of the hand-picked Negro leaders, who will allow the judges and the other persons that are involved in this white power structure to slow them down. It's only a trick. And as long as the masses of black people are involved in the struggle for freedom, not integration, but freedom, and respect as human beings, respect as men, and show that they're willing to die to be respected as men, then the power structure sits up and takes notice. But as long as this mass element is led, and when I say led, I use led in quotes, actually contained by Uncle Tom Negro leaders who hold them back, who tell them turn the other cheek, and things like that, then the white power structure isn't worried at all. They're only worried when they know that the masses of black people are ready to explode, and in exploding it will destroy some of the furniture in their house. And then they react accordingly.
Again, that was a Malcolm X clip that I found on YouTube, which you made reference to in your article, that I think you used the term that he has views on Uncle Tom has a great real estate on YouTube, something to that effect. So that's where I found that clip. But, you know, I was taking notes, but I want to give you the opportunity to, you know, if you took any mental notes, to what do you think about his expression on Uncle Tom's or hand-picked Negro leaders, of course, being picked by racist white supremacists. And why would they, you know, pick these people? And why are they choosing them? And what are they expected to do? But yeah, go ahead, please.
My response would be, number one, I think for folks who listen to the cows we just did, I think we spent about 3 months on our study session on Minister Malcolm's autobiography. So definitely I have great regard for his scholarship and his investment in trying to solve this problem. That being said, you're absolutely correct. I did reference Mr. Malcolm in this piece. And you got the quote correct as well. I said that he has sizable real estate on YouTube and online in general, where there are a lot of video clips of him indicting other black people, calling them out by name sometimes, as Uncle Toms and house niggas and a whole lot of other, I would say, derogatory comments for these black people that he's saying are holding back black people's efforts to successfully counter racism. And one of the things from reading his work and studying his life, I think after he left the Nation of Islam, 1964, 1965, he did speeches where he publicly apologized for calling many of these non-white people victims of racism, Dr. King, Roy Wilkins, some of the other folks, calling them Uncle Toms and other names. And he even went into more detail to say that he understood that white folks, racists, they absolutely love, and that's still the case today, black people to argue and squabble with other black people about what to do about racism, how we are responding to racism. That doesn't bother white people. That doesn't drive white people up the wall. That doesn't, you know, rev them up to get their COINTELPRO voices on the move when black people are fussing with other black people. He said, Minister Malcolm, that white people, they get anxious. They get rolling. They go in, hey, we got to get some more schemes together. Have to do some more wiretaps. Have to go plant some false evidence on somebody. Might even have to kill somebody. When they say, hey, I'm not squabbling with another enslaved black person ever. I'm going to focus on the problem, the person that is doing the hand picking of these quote unquote Uncle Toms, and those hands are white. I'm going to focus on that person because none of these so-called Uncle Toms would even be here if those white racist hands had not selected, allowed, permitted, instructed those non-white people about what they were supposed to be doing and not doing. And I think that's very crucial to keep that in mind. And I would just conclude, I think many, many people, they absolutely adore and listen to the wit and the humor and the passion that Minister Malcolm, that he gives when he's talking about racism and even when he's talking about Uncle Toms. For all of the many, 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 many speeches where he talked about Uncle Toms, none of that solved the problem of Uncle Tom black people, because we still hear people complaining about them in 2015. That should be thought of as well.
Okay. The first thing I wanted to make a mental note of, a shout out to the new abolitionists out there. I think Minister Malcolm was a abolitionist because he did not, during that interview, talk about slavery in past tense, but talked about modern slavery and those part of the new abolitionist movement. We call it 21st century slavery and human trafficking. This is where some confusion comes in to me, because again, he does, and yesterday we've been talking about Minister Malcolm, because on the 19th would have been what I think his 89th or 90th birthday, if he hadn't been assassinated. We've been talking about him, and I mentioned how he continuously evolved. You know, his views continue to evolve as he got more information, as he processed that information. And then he was, he possessed enough humility to admit that, you know, I made a mistake, that I was incorrect of my use of this term in this way or whatnot. Would you say that's accurate?
Absolutely. Yes, sir.
Okay. And, but He did point out the problem, though, and, you know, I think this name calling, just as it's used today, is born out of the frustration of black people, because some black people are trying to process mentally, you know, you look like me, you being oppressed like me, how can you then participate in, you know, helping, the system, no matter how you are being. My grandson just burst in the room showing me his brand new fishing rod. All right, Micah. Thank you. Yeah, we gonna go fishing. All right. Well, apologies for that. Apologies for that. But, yeah, he, described his tricks, and like you just stated, you know, white hands are the ones responsible for these people being in the positions that they are in, allowing them to do this. You didn't use the word giving them the platform or anything like that, but, you know, we're discussing, you know, media. I think it's also an important, part of this. So, I mean, would it be accurate in your view to say that, quote unquote, and I do not like using Uncle Tom's, but the masses are using this. So for, you know, so we can, you know, relate to them, while saying it's inaccurate to use that, but are they being used as a tool by racist men and racist women?
Well, at least I'm of the opinion, if we are in a system of racism, white supremacy, what does that mean? And that's, I even go back, I was thinking, at least for me, my view on it is not that it is a misunderstanding of the term Uncle Tom. In my view, it's a misunderstanding of what racism, white supremacy is. I know a lot of folks, or I hope, are familiar with Neely Fuller Jr.'s work, and he talks about racism. He's written several books. He gives lectures. At the beginning of both of his books, the very first thing that he has, if you don't understand racism, white supremacy, what it is and how it works, everything else that you understand will only confuse you. And I think for a lot of people, they've heard Mr. Fuller say that so many times, so they've heard other people repeat it, and so there's just, oh, that's, you know, his little catchphrase. He just likes to sell it so he can sell books or what have you. People know about him, and I don't think people really process the depth of what he's saying in that. If you don't really have an accurate grasp of how this system works and what it's supposed to produce, how it impacts the victims, what racists do to us, how they orchestrate us in the system since they have power over us, it just leads to a lot of what you just said, frustration. And Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, another great scholar, written a lot on racism as well, she says that one of our reflexive responses is to bash another black person, and generally the black person that's closest to us in terms of proximity, with our frustrations about racism. Yes, non-white people are being used by the system of white supremacy, but every single non-white person on the planet in some way, shape, or form is being used by the system of white supremacy. So if we're gonna go that route.
So let me clarify, if I may interject, let me clarify. I think that some of us are being used to a degree more than others. I mean, I could say an enslaved person on a prison plantation right now, well, they are being used by racist men, racist women to practice slavery. So they are being used, and they are allowing themselves to be used because, you know, they continue to work instead of saying, I'm not going to work. I don't care. You know, I'm not participating in slavery. So hang me if you will, beat me to death. I'm not participating. So, but they are part of, you know, the system. They're helping to uphold the system because of their work. It goes to fund racism and white supremacy now. But if I'm also a black person, which we have had black people who quote unquote are put in charge of these facilities, and I'm a black warden, then my participation in inflicting harm upon other black people, my participation in the system is certainly at a higher level or degree than the person who's sitting down there in solitary confinement. I mean, that seems, have I clarified what I'm talking about, the different degrees?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Just like you have different degrees, some white people in the system are more powerful than other white people. I think that's certainly true. And when you go to the victim side, the non-white side, absolutely. There are some non-white people who are being used to a greater degree to do more harmful things. Absolutely. If I was going to continue in terms of that misunderstanding, frequently because of our frustration with the system, we direct a lot of our energies on that black person, whether it's, well, these black police officers, you know, they're participating. I think it was a black officer who came in the shooting situation down in South Carolina with Walter Scott. I think they're reported to have been, I think there was a situation, last year, 2014, where a gang, it looked to me, they had video, a gang of white officers, they were brutalizing, a black suspect. There was a black female officer on the scene and she went and she turned the dash camera off. I think many people saw that and they were upset, looking at that as another example of a black person helping the system, particularly when they're directly brutalizing a black person. And many other illustrations pointing at black people that are politicians, even President Obama, to say, hey, these folks are doing big time work in helping the system stay in place. Now, I have devoted a lot of time to going the route of, well, these folks are still victims too. We can sit around and talk trash about them or President Obama or, you know, throw eggs at their house and all that good stuff. The end of the day, the problem comes down to what should be done. Like, even if I say, hey, you know what? I'm going to be quiet. I'm wrong. All this talk about, you know, forget Uncle Tom's, don't name call. It's not going to work. It's not constructive. It's not going to solve our problems. Hey, let's say Gus is wrong. Let's say, hey, we need to deal with all of the black people that are willfully helping keep this system in place. That black warden that you mentioned, the black female officer who turned that camera off, anybody else, Al Sharpton, anybody you can think of, even if Gus T. Renegade is on that list, fine. We need to deal with these folks. That's how we're going to solve racism. The question would be, or the series of questions really would be, what should be done?
Can I answer that?
Yes, sir.
Can I answer that? Well, it depends on what, which of the nine areas of people activity as defined by Neely Fuller Jr. that they are participating in and being, used to bring harm to other black people. So to quote unquote hold them accountable, if they're in, let's say, economics, let's say they own a store and let's say, you know, just for, let's just say they support the local Klan. They donate, they take up donations for the Klan. And it's owned by a black person. Well, how would you hold that black person accountable for that incorrect behavior? You stop shopping at his store. That's how you hold that person accountable. If it's an education system and it's black people that's miseducating people, teachers that are mistreating children, then you pull your children out of those schools. If it's an entertainment, you know, often entertainers are called quote unquote. And again, I can't stress enough. I do not agree with name calling. Okay. And I have really tried to work on my vocabulary. Just yesterday, I said I was going to stop calling people drug dealers and prostitutes because that's not what they are. And so again, it depends on what area in entertainment, quote unquote celebrities are frequently called Uncle Toms. Again, I don't agree with the name calling, but you know, I think we can come up with more constructive ways in explaining, why we disagree with what is being said and why it's being said. So if it's an entertainer, actor or somebody who shows a pattern and practice of seeing incorrect things and promoting incorrect behavior, well, how you hold them accountable is you do not, you know, purchase any movies, DVDs, and we shouldn't be doing any of this anyway. You know, I want to get that clear. If it's in politics, you know, number six, you know, whether that's the local judge, whether that's the local small town mayor, where it's a big city mayor, if we are participating in that people activity and we think that black people are incorrectly working in that area, or I mean in terms of politics, coming up with policies and supporting policies that's harmful for black people, well, when it comes re-election time, we don't vote for those black people. We look for more who we feel like are race conscious, counter-racist politician, and maybe we should be grooming our own. But that's how you hold black people accountable. If you think that in the area of religion that, you know, a black preacher preaching about some white Jesus or even preaching Christianity is incorrect. Well, how you hold them accountable is you don't attend their church. You don't promote their doctrine. So have I answered that question on how you hold them accountable?
That I see the logic in that, in terms of these people are doing these things that you don't agree with in the church, or if they have this local business, or if they're a politician, you're not going to vote for them. My concern would be, number one, consistently, when I hear non-white people, black people specifically, since we're talking about Uncle Tom's, it is not attached to any of that. What I hear pretty consistently is just sitting around and I don't agree with what this person said. This person is messing over black people and they need to be, you know, held accountable. They need to be dealt with. And frequently, it's not somebody that you can vote out of office. So that's not, you know, what we're talking about. Frequently, it's not somebody that we can boycott. We're just not going to go and, you know, shop at their store. If they have a church or place of worship or what have you, we're just not going to, you know, go listen to their service anymore. And that'll deal with it. It just boils down to a lot of talking bad about other black people. And it's not directly attached to anything that's going to solve this problem. I would even encourage non-white people, when you hear black people complain, because I hear it all the time. That's, in fact, I would say that's one of the standard lessons that I've learned. I put that in the top five for the amount of years that we have been broadcasting and scholars that we've had an opportunity to speak with all over the world. I have great concerns because I consistently hear the focus move away from we should be holding racist man, racist woman, racist child accountable for what they are doing, since ultimately they're the ones that have made this whole thing.
How do we do that? How do we do that, Gus? How do we hold them accountable?
Therein lies the problem. Therein lies the issue, because I'm of the opinion, I mean, we're talking about people that have very little power in the system of white supremacy, other black people. It's very, black people demonstrate that to me on a daily basis, that they don't have much of a problem confronting and going to get at another black person. These white people, it's a very different conversation. It's a much more difficult conversation. And as I said in the article, hey, the graves of Steve Biko, Medgar Evers, and a whole lot of other black people are evidence that it can be a dangerous and potentially fatal thing to say, I'm going to hold these white people accountable for what they're doing to black people. That
I think you mentioned Patrice Lumumba as well, right?
Absolutely. I mean, long list. Okay. Long list, right, of all kinds of folks, black females as well, who put their life on the line. When black journalists, Ida B. Wells, put their life on the line to hold white people accountable. Holding black people accountable, that, and as I said in the article, that activity, it will just go on and on and on forever. In this system, is so easy for white people, by coercion, they could come and say, hey, you're going to do this, or I am going to miraculously find evidence that you've been involved in criminal activity and you're going to be looking at some major charges. So you're going to do this or else. Or they could come the nice way and say, well, hey, if you do this, we got a great cushy job for you, window office, great salary. It'll be awesome. All we need you to do is mess over these, you know, 5, 10, 50. But they can come either way. It's so easy for them to manipulate black people.
So do you think that black people, I mean, to me, okay, let me back up for just a minute. My system has cleared up a little bit. I think I can maneuver on my computer without it locking up. So for those that have dialed into the conference line, if you have a question or comment, just hit *6 in the number 1. You can also let me just check Skype right quick to see if it's not locking up. Okay, it seems to be okay. You can also hit us up on the studio line at 704-951-5030. Backing up, like Patrice Lumumba, I remembered him specifically being mentioned in an article because I had just was listening to a documentary on the Tando radio show talking about the CIA activities to prevent black people from attaining freedom in Africa, you know, back during the 50s and the 60s. And if I'm wrong, but I believe that Patrice Lumumba was assassinated by other black people, even though the CIA was behind it. Racist men, again, you know, black people who are being the hands of the white supremacists. But I mean, isn't that correct that Patrice Lumumba was killed by other black people, other Africans?
That is my understanding, that they were participants in the whole system. I think Minister Malcolm, I know Minister Malcolm talked about that as well. But I mean, that's pretty standard. That's not uncommon.
I think that's an example. That's an example of what you just said, though. Black people willing to hold other black people, or to, let's say, harm other black people, but they aren't, you know, so willing, and we're talking about the masses of people, are not so willing to confront racism and white supremacy because they don't want to be killed, but they will kill for racism, white supremacy. Am I correct? Isn't that what you believe as well?
Well, that is the system of white supremacy. This system is designed to train violence on black people, and large scale violence, not just one or two black people, not just a Freddie Gray here, a Walter Scott here, or Rekia Boyd, but I mean hundreds of thousands of black people being killed, maimed, slaughtered on a consistent, perpetual basis. So whether it's Patrice Lumumba in the Congo, whether it's black inmates who were told to beat Fannie Lou Hamer in a Mississippi prison, even Minister Malcolm X, since we've been talking about him, unless I've been misinformed, other black people also participated in his assassination, all under the direction of white folks. And what my view is that this pattern is going to continue to play out under this system, meaning black people doing things that are injurious to our own individual self-interest, collective self-interest. That's what the system produces. Now, we can do as much as we can to not conform to that. But I'm of the opinion, I have not seen any constructive result when we start saying, hey, I'm going to go get at this other black person because they're going along and helping out racist man, racist woman. I have not seen anything to successfully prevent that from happening under this system. And I doubt there's anything that's going to stop that as long as this system exists. White people can exert a lot more pressure on black people than black people can. And either that's true or it's not.
I say yes, white people can put more pressure on, but at the same time though, black people have to be responsible. I think I even heard Dr. Welsing say that we are responsible for our own actions. And to me, in my opinion, in my view, if we are going to end the system of racism, white supremacy, then we should be working towards the goal of 100% non-cooperation. In my view, that will bring it in. If we don't kill for racist man and racist woman, then, you know, we are not help, you know, that benefits us by not killing each other for the system. And I can make a conscious decision. I have made a conscious decision when I was in the United States military during the Gulf War, reading Malcolm X's biography. And he, you know, talked about how, you know, as a black person, I'm over here fighting, you know, for so-called freedom, but then my people ain't even free at home. And that really struck me at during my present, you know, situation. And you know what my decision was? To get out. I saw that I was engaged in incorrect behavior. I stopped participating militarily. I thought it was incorrect for me, and it was quite harmful to me. Now, when I say harmful to me, yes, I have suffered some things, but not as much as the 700,000 estimated veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan war who find themselves to now be 21st century prison slaves. So, you know, I think that we owe it to ourselves. I think we are intellectually capable of educating the masses. I mean, that's why you do radio, isn't it? Isn't that why you do the cows? That's why I listen to the cows, is because I think it is constructive in deprogramming. Because, yeah, let's shift gears to deprogramming, because you mentioned the drop squad. In the article, if I recall correctly. And you said that, you know, they were kidnapping black people, and then you said that they were torturing them, like Abu Ghraib. But I never ever watched Drop Squad? I found out that it was the executive director was Spike Lee. I think the script was written or co-written by a white person. I know one of the directors was also white, and I read the synopsis of the program, but they were actually just kidnapping. And again, we're talking about fiction now. We're talking about a movie. They were kidnapping these people not to do them harm, but to deprogram them of racism and white supremacy, to help them understand how their behavior was uncodified, it was incorrect, and that it was helping to sustain a system of racism, white supremacy. And I don't know, I didn't see the film, so I guess some of those people may have changed, but then there was an internal debate among the people part of the Drop Squad. Vin Rhames character wanted to be violent against these people, but the other character was like, no, we are not going to use violence against these black people. We're just going to, you know, use nonviolent means to deprogram them. And so I feel like, you know, the context of white supremacy, when it comes on air, I feel like many of the programs on the Black Talk Radio Network that we are engaging in Drop Squad activities. Obviously, we are not kidnapping folks, but we are trying to promote to them what we feel like is constructive behavior, and I hope promoting non-cooperation with racism, white supremacy. I know I said a lot. Sometimes I do that, Gus. Forgive me. please respond to any portion of that.
Oh, appreciate it. My response would be, and I don't know the age range or what people have seen and listened to your program, but the film, The Drop Squad, it came out in the midnight. I guess it's about 1994. Yes, sir. Ving Rhames is in it. A few other folks that people, I suspect they would know or recognize if they saw the film. They are basically going and snatching up these black people, and they bring them. It's on YouTube if people, you know, want to watch, what have you. But they bring these black people. They snatch them up off the street, put them in a van. Sometimes other black people will say, you know, hey, you should drop squad this person. You need to get this person. They're messing up. They're not doing the correct thing. So they tie them up. Abduct them. This would be a charge, at least from what I saw. This would be like an abduction, a kidnapping charge at minimum. Yeah. And so they take them to their facility. They have them tied up, and they, you know, read stuff. And it just, at least in my opinion, it was, even though it was fiction, and I mean, it's an exaggeration, of course, this is a movie, but it reminded me a lot of what I hear consistently in our frustration with the system of white supremacy. A lot of the dialogue that I hear that is focused on other black people and being upset with how they're responding to white terrorism. And I would submit, I do not in any way, shape, or form say that anything that I'm doing is at all similar to what is depicted in the Drop Squad. The cows is voluntary. I don't make anybody listen to my program.
What I meant, Gus, was the activity of deprogramming people. I wasn't talking, of course, I'm not going to say, we should be kidnapping people. Yes, that is a crime, and you will find yourself a 21st century slave, and just everything is just so incorrect about harming another individual by kidnapping them. But I meant your work in media. That is why we do. Minister Malcolm talked about the power of the media programming, how it can make the innocent look guilty and the guilty look innocent. He talked about how the white men and women who run the so-called media uses this to misinform us, and also demonize people. And but so black people also use media in as counter racism. Robert F. Williams, you know, Radio Free Dixie, Martin Luther King will often get on a black radio station. So that's what I meant. And by Drop Squad activities, their main mission was not to harm these black people, but it was to deprogram them and help them see how they were engaging in incorrect behavior. Isn't that what you do on the cows? Isn't that what Neely Fuller does? Isn't that what many, many other counter-racists, people who classify themselves as counter-racists, do? That use media, and that could be writing books, that could be producing short films, that could be, you know, all of it. And the radio, you know, that's a form of media. So that's how I view it as counter-racist programming. So if you're a confused person and you tune into this type of programming, we're hoping it's deprogramming you of what racist man and woman has been programming you with all your life. That's what I mean. I didn't mean to suggest that we should be kidnapping people and holding them hostage in a room and saying, you gonna listen to Black Talk Radio Network at least 10 hours a day. So no, that's not what I'm talking about, but I'm talking about the work that you do in helping people to become less confused.
Oh, for sure. I hope that, the work we're doing is helping black people, non-white people become less confused and have a more accurate grasp of what racism is and even some things that they can do, to try to work against this system. I really in the same vein of being precise, and careful about the words that we use, I try to be careful with, metaphors, comparisons that people make. And really just with that film, and I don't know how many people have seen it, having watched the film, for me, just some of the images, they are profoundly disturbing. Seeing black people yelling at other black people, bound black people yelling at them. And I mean, I hear this frequently when people say, I think if folks remember, it's been so many instances, but Charles Barkley, black basketball, retired basketball player. He came out, I think this was right after, the conflict in Ferguson where they did not indict Michael Brown Jr.'s killer. And he said, they're lowlifes or they're scum or, oh, I can't believe, you know, they're out there doing this. And I mean, he's a pattern of doing this sort of thing. And I heard, people saying, you know, Charles Barkley should be beaten. He should be whipped. And I just said, you know, at least for me, I would hope that there is a pause, as we are under the global system of slavery, white supremacy. Any talk of lashing, whipping another black person, I would hope that there is great pause to say, well, wait a minute. Maybe this is just further evidence of the contamination of white supremacy. I'm all for us. We have to change our behavior.
Because that's what they did to people in Drop Squad. They use violence, right? And all these violent images, and right? So we're talking about the masses. And so therefore, you know, like I had a conversation with Trojan Pam. You know, and we talked about the average reading level of all people. You know, not just black people. And I gotta believe they're fearing, let me check myself. See, I do learn from the crow. I do listen to the cows and try to be codified in my language as well. So check myself on that one. I'm sorry. I lost my train of thought, Gus. What were we just?
Trojan Pan.
Yeah, for Trojan Pan. We were talking about the reading level of people, and purposely so, I believe that, you know, especially non-white children, have, you know, they don't want them to be able to read, you know, because with being literate, you know, that can help you avoid some of the pitfalls of racism, white supremacy. So they definitely don't want you to be able to read. And then if you can't, read, then you may have trouble also processing information, you know, and so I believe that is purposely so. And so to me, those people, and I personally don't know any people. I'm talking about real people in my family or people I regularly associate that use that type of language and say that, you know, we should do harm and violence. We should assassinate them and this and that. I think that those people who say those things on social media, you know, man, we have to think about, well, we have other questions. What is their education level? What is their, you know, why are they expressing this? What is the root problem of this? And then helping them to understand that it's not really, you know, that President Obama is just, the man standing in front of the curtain. He's not the man behind the curtain. He, in helping them to understand, cause that's what I think Malcolm was trying to do, was trying to help the masses, the uneducated, unsophisticated, masses understand what he called, quote, tricks of racism and white supremacy that they were using, that they're using these black people to trick you and confuse you about the system of racism and white supremacy. So I think that's where we have to consider that, because in reality, nobody is really going out there gunning down Don Lemon or Morgan Freeman or trying to kidnap any of these people and harm them. I think a lot of time when people be talking, saying those things on social media, it's just talk, Gus. That's in my opinion. They just don't know what else to say. And perhaps again, they are confused and they don't understand how the system works. That make any sense?
To me, that is extremely logical, both with where you started out, you were saying you and the conversation you had with Trojan Pam about the reading levels and, you know, what their understanding is, what their level of information is about what they're talking about, people who might be frustrated or expressing things on social media or in other conversation about things that are happening. I would submit just simply that even though that it is words, and sometimes I totally agree, sometimes it is just people talking, just people running off at the mouth, or I guess you would say running off at the keyboard, on Facebook or Twitter or, you know, whatever it is that they're doing. But I would still say that that is significant, and I would even say it shouldn't be taken lightly, because there is a legacy. This is not a new thing in terms of black people, victims of racism. This is not something that's peculiar to black people, just again, that's the group that we're talking about. But the individuals classified as black under this system, there's a long legacy of white people deliberately, in my view, getting us off to be frustrated and focused on other black people. Now, I would say you can take this back the 1960s. We already talked about Minister Malcolm and him calling other black people Uncle Toms. You can look at the conflict between the Black Panthers and the United Slaves. And I cannot understate when you talk about COINTELPRO and you talk about the depths of white supremacy, white people will sit back and instigate these sort of
things to
get black people, you know, fussing and arguing and in conflict with other people. And it might start off with, hey, I feel like I have a legitimate point here that this black person, what they're doing, is harmful to other black people. This is not going to be sending us in the correct direction. And I want to hold them accountable. White people are so super skilled, I think far beyond what most of our understanding is, at being able to instigate those sort of conflicts to where they balloon into where it's not just words anymore. Now it's conflict. Now it's, hey, we got gunfire and fights and brawls and people going to jail and all kinds of nonsense. And there's too many instances of that. I would even say something. You can take Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier. There is a documentary film. These are former fighters, both black males, who fought three times, if memory's correct, in the later 1960s, early 1970s. Joe Frazier, this is recent. this is within the last decade, where Joe Frazier, he was doing a documentary film, and he was talking, and he was saying that Muhammad Ali, he did all these public interviews where he was calling him an Uncle Tom and a sellout, saying he was working with the white man, working with the man, and doing this and running line, all this stuff. And you could tell a half century basically had passed since, you know, all the stuff over at least 40 years, all the things that they were talking about. And he was so angry about all the things that he said. I mean, he had his children on. His children were very young at this time. His children, Joe Frazier's children, were about 10 years old. They were on. Now they're adults. They're on talking about how painful this was for their father. And like, he still hasn't let go of this. These conflicts that we get in with other black people, even we say that we are coming in this with the best of intentions. We want to end racism and we just want to get other black people to correct their behavior so that we can solve this problem. Just because the environment is so toxic and saturated with anti-blackness that Pam talks about, I can conclude my point this way. I would say in this environment, what I see every day is already an endless cycle of black people being blamed. Freddie Gray broke his own spine. President Obama ruined the whole country. Jay-Z and hip-hop and rap music and Beyonce, they've ruined everything. They've ruined it. It's just an endless cycle of criticize and blame black people, criticize and blame black people. Anything that's not a big deviation from that, where it's, hey, I'm done criticizing other black people. I'm out of that business completely. I understand that black people do a lot of incorrect things and it's all white people's fault, but I'm not going to be out here talking bad and bashing other black people. That to me seems like a major deviation. It's been my experience that frequently a lot of these holding black people accountable and their sellouts, and I'm trying to get them to correct their behavior, it's not that much of a deviation from what we have anyway on the plantation of white supremacy.
Callers, I'm getting ready to hit the phone lines. But again, I would say this though. Of course, I do not agree. I don't think name calling is constructive. I will also point out Muhammad Ali also saw the incorrectness of his behavior and apologized to Joe Frazier. If my memory serves me correct, isn't that true?
The footage that I saw, he did apologize, but Joe Frazier was saying that he didn't come to him directly. Now, I might have missed some of the other things. He said that he went to his son and he did apologize. So he did not seem that he was satisfied with the apology.
Okay, but Muhammad Ali did acknowledge his behavior was incorrect.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And so again, that is why I think though that the work of counter-racist programming is important in helping it to get to the masses. Because, I mean, they're only, reacting to the system. I call, you know, they're looking at a Don Lemon giving out incorrect information and possibly engaging in victim bashing, and they get frustrated and, you know, they just say, oh, that old Uncle Tom or this and that, and I hope he loses his job or whatever. And they're not looking at, you know, the white person. Of course they can't look at them, but they're not thinking about the white person who is actually typing, you know, the words, literally putting them on the teleprompter, putting words in Don Lemon his mouth. So that is why it's important for us to help those uneducated masses, those confused masses, to also evolve on their view, and then see, you know, I think we can point out that this behavior by a black person and that behavior by a black person is incorrect, because that's in effect what we're doing here today. And I think that's what your article is doing, is saying that black people who talk about hunting Uncle Toms or harming Uncle Toms, and that's not going to do anything, you know, to end racism. It's unconstructive. I mean, you know, and so those who are saying without name calling that Don Lemon, whatever argument he made tonight, this is why that argument is incorrect, you know. And, you know, you can name his producer, whatever, but I'm like Malcolm. I think the masses have to be explained why this black person is up there saying what they saying. I think that's all he was attempting to do, you know, as, you know, he, I guess, got better, at his delivery as he processed more information and how it was incorrect to engage in name calling but I think it has to be explained to the masses, because why would the white supremacists even bother with these black people? Why even have black people on their white people's networks? Why? I mean, it's got to be a logical reason of why, because they are usually not in the business of helping black people, you know, whether that's to help them get a job or something like that, unless they want to use them for specific purpose. Because I think it would then, you know, just be all white people all day long when we turn on the television channel. So let me play this clip of Neely Fuller. And in your article, you say that Neely Fuller doesn't define does not have a definition for Uncle Tom. But I think in this clip, where he talks about racial showcasing, he is talking about the behavior of racist men and racist women and using black people and what that purpose is for them using that black person. So this is Neely Fuller. I think he was on the Cows, talking about racial showcasing.
What is racial showcasing? That means taking huge numbers of black people and putting them out front. There's going to be more of this all over the planet. Many, many millions of black people that you will see who will be rolling in money. They'll be able to showcase the places where they live. They'll be able to showcase their knowledge and expertise. So you have television now, you have all of the mediums for doing this, for showcasing huge numbers of black people. I will say it will eventually run into the millions, so many that you won't be able to count them. Now, what is this for? This is for any black person that starts talking about racism in the future is going to be laughed at, because they're going to be able to showcase so many black people who are what you call quote-unquote successful, that it will seem that racism has been put out of business. But white supremacy is a world business, and like any other business, it works on profits and losses. which means percentages. You go into business, you expect a certain amount of loss. If you're in the grocery business, well, you might have a load of asparagus that is spoiled. But overall, you will make more profits than you have losses if you're going to stay in the business. Now, so the white supremacists know that the cost of doing the business of white supremacy is going up. They can no longer get away with Joe Lewis and Lena Horne like they did years ago. They have to have many, many, many more black people who are going to be showcased. I made up this term just to explain it. You have to make up terms because they won't make them up for you. So now that's the first phase or one of the first elements in the maximum confusion.
All right, I'm going to stop it there. And that's a clip that I used to regularly play. I, you know, play so many clips. But again, to me, he is explaining, you know, what the masses, and again, I think personally it's incorrect to engage in name calling, but this is what they're talking about when they refer to Don Lemon as a Uncle Tom, when Don Lemon is being showcased on CNN, or Al Sharpton is being showcased on MSNBC. And why are these people being showcased? Well, they're being showcased because of they help bring about maximum confusion. And that is what I think Malcolm X was talking about in that clip we played earlier, is that, you know, the system, the white man, they want to push you towards integration. Like, integration is going to solve the problem of racism, white supremacy. And to sell you on, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, and to sell you on integration, we're going to showcase or send out these particular black leaders. And it's to what? To confuse you that integration is going to solve the problem of why black of attaining freedom for black people. Your thoughts?
My thoughts, that sound clip, that concept of racial showcasing, I think is very important, and particularly explaining the mechanics of what you're seeing, how you can have a system of white supremacy and still have a non-white person in the White House, or you turn on CNN and boop, there's a non-white person sitting in the broadcast chair giving you the news for this major global news corporation. I think is very important in giving the strategy of how it benefits racists to manipulate and have these black people appear as though they are in charge. And just to add two components to that, I think number one, I think he focuses on this as an action. Racial showcasing, this is something that white people do to practice racism and how they manipulate their victims. Very focused on what white people are doing. It's been my experience, and I just keep saying this again because it's one of the top lessons that I've learned, really one of the major trends that I've observed in the years and really seriously studying racism, white supremacy. That term, I have seen it be manipulated repeatedly. I started noticing, I think the first time in 2011, people who listened to my program, people who listened to the Black Talk Radio Network, they weren't saying racial showcasing. They were saying showcase blacks. And it took me a while of hearing it before I even noticed, say, wait a minute, that's not what Mr. Fuller, that's not his term. And I mean, hey, that's fine. Everybody, you can make up your own terms. Mr. Fuller encourages that, and you know, you don't need his permission to do so. But they were saying showcase blacks and attributing that term to Mr. Fuller. Mr. Fuller never said the term showcase blacks. I called to verify to make sure that's not in any of his books. And he said, I would never say the term showcase blacks because it is getting very close to name calling.
So we're talking semantics here.
Well, it's more than semantics. It's really about where you put your attention. Showcase blacks, the attention has gone to the victim. And when I've heard people speak and they use the term showcase blacks, it's very much in the vein of this black person is messing up and they need to be dealt with. And right now is getting very close to, and they don't, every time I hear showcase blacks, it doesn't necessarily get to this black person should be beaten, this black person should be killed, or whatever the case may be, but it is not presented in a manner that this black person is subject to white people who are dictating, controlling, manipulating what it it is that they do so that they function in a way that's not helpful to black people, that helps to maintain white supremacy. It's a huge difference, in my opinion, when your focus, whether you're focusing that white people are doing something incorrect, white people are always to blame for what's happening on racism, or I'm going after this black person. This black person needs to be dealt with. They're messing up. They're messing over black people. That's number one, just in terms of where we're focusing. The second thing that I think critically important with the whole Showcase Black, or just with the clip that you played, I am of the opinion, yes, absolutely, non-white people, they need to be informed, educated about what's happening with racism, white supremacy, so that they can make sense when they see a Don Lemon or Melissa Harris Perry, because I've heard she gets thrown in that group too sometimes, being on Tom. I'm of the opinion, because you were talking about why would white people do this. Absolutely, yes, it contributes to confusion, people not really being able to grasp that white people dominate the entire planet, not being able to think that way, because, hey, every time I turn on the TV, I see Melissa Harris Perry, I see Don Lemon, I see Al Sharpton, I see Michelle Obama and Barack Obama, their president, and Attorney General Loretta Lynch now, formerly Eric Holder. He was black too. What are you talking about, white supremacy? You got all these black people in charge in powerful positions. And I would even add Jesse Lee Peterson in there. No, folks heard that program from last week. I think particularly, why would white people put these type of black people out here doing, functioning in this way, saying the things that they do? You were saying Don Lemon, him coming on and giving out incorrect information. I would certainly say Jesse Lee Peterson would be in the same category. I think part of the reason that white people do this, yes, it throws you off. You get confused. You don't think it's racism because it looks like there are a lot of powerful, in charge black people. I think another reason that they do that, white people have studied us extensively. They are responsible for black people being anti-black in the first place. They know we don't like black people because they've trained us not to like black people. That's why they have all these nasty and disgusting images of black people constantly, so that we have the lowest possible opinion of ourselves, black people on the whole. That way it will work even better when you get a Don Lemon or Jesse Lee Peterson or any black person who has one of these positions, and you've already written out their script. Okay, I want you to get out and say this. Slavery was great. Black people were uncouth and savage, and if it wasn't for Christianity and the good white man and the good white woman, you all would have been swinging at your... Okay, boom, boom, boom. Write all that. Get out. Go out and say that. You get on CNN, go say that. When the Jesse Lee Peterson show starts, say that. They know it's going to be especially effective because our tendency, as dictated by this system, we already want to be in conflict with another black person, not white people. I think I said that in the article. This system, our response is not to have an intense hatred that we go about broadcasting every day for white people. Our response from this system is, I'm upset with this black person. I'm going to go get at this black person. I think that's another component for why they showcase these individuals, because they know the psychology of victims of racism, because they have groomed and conditioned that psychology for years with terrorism.
Malcolm X, again, let me play just this portion of the clip. I think he does put the onus on white people, in terms of the, saying showcase black folks. I think that's a matter of semantics. You would have to ask the person themselves. I would have to read what context they're using it in. But to me, if I read that, well, my question would be, who's doing the showcasing? Well, the white people is doing the showcasing, obviously. So, you know, I just thought that that was a matter of semantics. But if they were saying Neely Fuller said, you know, this and that, then yeah, it is incorrect, because technically he didn't say that, even though you've come up with, you know, a metaphor just saying it different. You know, that's going to occur, especially in the, you know, well, I shouldn't say especially, but with the English language. But I think though that Malcolm X did put the onus, you know, on how these black people were being used by white people, and just make sure I refresh my memory. Let me play this clip again.
The white power structure today is just as much interested in perpetuating slavery as the white power structure was 100 years ago, only now they use modern methods of doing so, and realizing that the black people in this country are waking up and becoming filled with a desire to be looked upon as men and as human beings, the white power structure to slow down that struggle for freedom and human dignity uses tricks. 100 years ago, they could do it with chains. Today, they use tricks.
All right, I'll stop it there. And again, he keeps saying the white power structure. The white power structure is doing this and doing that, and he uses tricks. And in the trick, you know, the terminology that he used during that time or in this interview was Uncle Tom, where you're using a person to, a black person to come out and promote an agenda that is going to be harmful for, towards black people, and it's not going to solve the problem of racism, white supremacy. So I think he is putting the onus on white people and not on the black people themselves. But again, he seems to be attempting, like Mr. Fuller attempts to explain, you know, what another thing that Mr. Fuller said, well, you know, what is this for? Well, this is for when somebody else start complaining about racism, you know, then we'll look at them like they crazy because, you know, look at all these successful black people, you know, President Obama is the president. We've seen that, you know, if the people of the United States was racist, if the white people was racist, President Obama wouldn't have got elected. You know, we, again, the confusion. And so again, you know, I think it is very important that we impress upon people, when they see black people saying these things that register as being anti-black, that register as promoting a policy that's going to be harmful to black people, that, you know, we just understand it in the context of white supremacy. But I think Malcolm was putting it in the context in that particular clip.
Oh yes, the clip that you played, absolutely. I think, you know, he was making it very clear that white people are culpable. White people are to blame for what's happening. I would simply submit that it's been my experience that that is typically not the case. When I hear many non-white people articulate their frustrations or observations about things that are happening on the system of white supremacy, it seems that, at least in my view, white people are frequently left out of that equation, or they really are not assigned an accurate amount of the blame for what they have done, for the role that they have played in why these incorrect things are happening, even if we're talking about something, Don Lemon being on CNN or other non-white people, other black people that are indicted, charged as being quote unquote Uncle Toms. It's been my experience that the onus and making sure that we're very clear in indicting and charging racist man, racist woman in these incorrect acts, for the most part, I don't hear the same level of clarity with regards to making sure that we pin white folks in this crime, this criminal activity. I don't hear that same level of clarity when I hear other non-white people. And I think, as you said pretty consistently, I hope that is the role. I hope that's what we're trying to correct here at Black Talk Radio Network.
Area code 973, thank you for calling in and hanging on patiently there. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Good day, Gus. I'm not used to hearing you this early. I'm on the East Coast. Good afternoon, Mr. Reed.
Good afternoon.
Of course, you know what, Mr. Reed, I always tell you, I respectfully disagree with you. And right now, I agree with you on this. I respectfully disagree with Mr. Renegade. I really have a lot of problems I wouldn't say putting them to blame, but I kind of learned something which you just said, Gus. Why can't we do this? Preface the conversation and say, well, you know, Steve Harvey is doing what he's getting paid to do. I mean, a white guy put him there, and he's doing the exact job that the white man wants him to do, is to act like a buffoon. So why should we be upset at Steve Harvey for doing what he's supposed to do? Then another part of me is saying to myself, because I have a tape, it's called Def Jam, and I need to send it to you guys, because you wouldn't believe what Steve Harvey said about 10 to 15 years ago about the media. You'd be like, is this the Steve Harvey of today? But, you know, he's being paid now, so of course he's changed his mind about things. But are you guys familiar with Uncle Ruckus on the Boondocks? Have you ever watched that show?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Well, Uncle Ruckus, you know he has a self-hatred of black people. He's almost like the honorary white person on that show. And to me, that is the epitome of an Uncle Tom. Everything about him hates blacks. you know, he feels that he was this white person and he had this skin disease and he turned white, I mean, turned black. And I think about the self-hatred because I do believe, Mr. Renegade and Mr. Reed, there are people who are not going to participate in this. I'm not going to call a person out in public, but I will call them out and take them to the side and ask them, what are they doing? What are you doing? This is not good. Because it's always been that Uncle Tom, I'm sorry, but that's how I feel, who has stopped slave revolt. That one, I think about the Django. Remember the guy who was the Uncle Tom? I mean, he even sat with the guy, I mean, he stood up while the guy was eating throughout that segment where they were talking about buying the woman. And I just think about how that one individual, you know, we didn't have those people. I think things would have changed. I mean, you always had that Uncle Tom who has affected the masses, that Uncle Tom who went and told the slave master that, oh yes, the master boss, they're going to run, you better go get them. So I'm sorry, it's impending in my soul that it just detests me when I see them. I don't think they still have to participate in this activity. Also, there was also Dave Chappelle. I have his whole anthology of tapes. And there was one situation where it was a segment where they made people honorary white people. And I, you know, of course, you know, what's his name?
Like a sports draft.
He's in jail. Yeah, right. They made him honorary. We said, oh, yeah, we're going to make him honorary white people. So I think a lot of these Uncle Toms do have a lot of hate with them as far as that self-hatred. And the self, and you did talk about that, Mr. Renegade, the self-hate, they want us to hate. But I think, again, we're at a certain point now where we have to be responsible for our actions. And, again, I say don't participate. You don't have to openly accuse them or whatever, but you got to call them under the carpet because this will continue. If you're rich and you got all this money, look at Beyonce. There's something that they can do. How many dollars does it take to please you? There's something, I mean, we think about the prison plantation where you said there was this guy making, I think, Johanna Hannum, not Hannum, but someone talked about how he was making all this money, but he needed more money, and he lost his job, and he lost everything. How much does it really take to keep being that Uncle Tom? So I'm really truthful about it. I believe, too, that they can not participate. Because, like I said, that Uncle Tom, and I've been getting a look at history throughout, but that Uncle Tom has really did a lot. Yes, it was white supremacy, but somebody can say, you know, if I was back then, they would be, if I had a gun, I would shoot them all. I'm so sorry, but we suffered too much to have this behavior to keep continuing. I know, you know, they may want the lucrative and all that, but when is enough enough? I'm going to mute my line. Thank you so much for your time, God.
Thank you for sharing your views with us. One thing I would just add off the bat is I would just think about coming up with another example other than citing movies that are created by racist suspects, especially like Tarantino, Quentin Tarantino. I mean, just his whole film, filmology, you know, his use of the N-word and, you know, but I think like, you know, we should look to use real life examples. And I think you are correct. You know, what would have happened, you know, if Denmark Vesey and Guller Jack, if other black people didn't quote unquote not snitch on them, which, you know, is in I think Neely Fuller's 10 stops, right? No snitching, right? Where he suggests to us that these are things that should be on our stops. And while he doesn't include it on his list, I accept his list, but at the top of mind, you know, like you said, he encourages people to develop their own codes and words and definition. And at the top of mind is stop cooperating. And again, earlier there's different degrees of, you know, quote unquote cooperation. But as much as possible, where I'm not going to engage in overt acts of supporting racism, white supremacy, whether that's working, seeking jobs as a race soldier, seeking jobs as, you know, working in the United States military. Again, I cited the reasons why I got out because my conscience after, you know, Malcolm X, you know, made me question what I was doing and how I was supporting the oppression of non-white people on a global scale. I made the decision to get out, to not participate, to stop, you know. And so I think we are totally, we should, again, nobody can just, it's hard to just quit cold turkey. In fact, it's impossible to quit cold turkey. We have to use the white supremacist banking system, millions of us right now that are trapped on this continent. We have to go, you know, to many corporations that may use slave labor because we can't find it nowhere else. And we're trying our best to find conflict-free products and services and whatnot, but it's, white supremacy is so pervasive, you know what I'm saying? But again, when we participate, like yesterday, I was watching a video of these two 15-year-old teenage black girls, a black cop jumping out the car on them. You push this button and I'm going to arrest you, I'm going to detain you, and blah, 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 all this and that. And if not for the community snatching the young lady from his arms, you know, he was going to put her through the quote unquote system, through the criminal justice system, but they prevented that by not participating through, you know, just standing around and allowing this to happen. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, I admit it's a great challenge. If overthrowing racism, white supremacy was easy, we would have done it a long time ago, you know, but I think we constantly must be educating ourselves first and foremost and educating others and having conversations like you are graciously having with us today, Gus, to where we can have a cordial back and forth where we're trying to figure out, okay, let's look at this tactic. Is that logical? Does it work in this situation or apply in that situation? And, but again, you know, I think number one on anybody's stop list should be non-participation. As much as possible with that caveat, you know, don't be out there. I think it's not too much to ask for, like KRS-One said in his track, Black Cop, stop shooting black people. Black cop, stop shooting black people. Hell, just let them get away and say, oh, he ran too fast. You know what I'm saying? Just little things that we can do, even embedded like an Uncle Tom in a system where we can help black people without exposing ourselves too much. Just those little things, you know, we could work on just building up our stops, you know, and changing our behavior. And I think we will get a lot further in ending this system. Your thoughts on anything the caller had to say or anything I just said, Gus?
I would say, I'm not accustomed to being on the air this early either, a little early in the day for myself as well, but that notwithstanding, to the points that she made, I would say you heard it right there. She said if she had been alive back then, she would have went and shot the Uncle Toms. She didn't say the white people, she said the Uncle Toms. And I have that in my report that we're talking about today, why hunting Uncle Toms won't end racism. Mr. Fuller said, if we're going to be scientific about going about solving this problem, which he says is something that we have not done, if we're thinking scientifically, if we kill every single Uncle Tom, I'm not saying anybody on the line advocated that, but just for argument, if we kill every single Uncle Tom on the planet right now, let's say we get our list, it's 5,000, it's 10,000, how many ever of them it is, we kill them all, nothing about the predicament of black people would improve at all. Now that either is true or it's not.
Gus, let's flip that. What if everybody said, I'm not going to be a quote unquote Uncle Tom? And again, I don't like using that word Uncle Tom. I prefer to use, you know, proxy racist tool because I think that it puts the onus on the person, the racist white supremacist that is using a person as a proxy, as their agent out in the world. What if black people just decided, or people who may even classify themselves as Uncle Toms just said that, you know, we're not going to be Uncle Toms. We're not going to, as much as possible, you know, tell lies on black people. We're not going to demonize black people. We're not going to do this. We're not going to do that. We're not going to be prison guards. We're not going to hunt black people in these communities to make them 21st century slaves. What if we, you know, stop doing that? Do you think that would change our position, perhaps? Globally?
That that to me, if I'm understanding, that's two different things. If black people said, to the best of my ability.
Yes, it is two different things looking for the same agenda, though, to reach the same. The goal is the same, to end racism, white supremacy. That's why a person wants to kill all the Uncle Toms, because they think that's going to be the solution. I'm saying if we can deprogram the Uncle Toms and educate our children so that there are no new Uncle Toms, if you will, that, you know, that is a nonviolent way that I think, you know, if we just quit cooperating or collaborating with racists, you know, that it would do a lot to improve our status in this system or our condition.
Based on my understanding of racism, white supremacy, as long as this system is here, you're going to have black people that are cooperating with the system. Okay. That's going to be here. And I'm of the opinion.
Then I agree with that.
With us trying to figure out a means to solve this problem, I've concluded you're going to have to factor in, okay, we're going to have to solve this problem and the Uncle Toms are going to be here. Quote unquote, Uncle Toms are going to be here. Black people that are cooperating with the system and they have no interest in doing anything associated with countering racist white supremacy, that you're likely going to have a substantial number of these folks that are still present as we go about trying to solve this problem. That's just what the system produces, and it's nothing you can do about that. Now, we can sit around and talk about going to kill them all or name call them or boycott them or vote them out of office. That's simply not grasping what this system produces. This system cranks out quote unquote Uncle Toms faster than we can deal with them because it's easy. That's why I keep saying, just going back to that power dynamic. That's something that we've got to be honest, in looking at. Again, I would even submit, just based on what the caller said, the films, and she mentioned Boondocks and, the film Django Unchained. I would submit white people, they condition us, and that's two great examples right there. They condition us to be, hey, we got to deal with these Uncle Toms. That's what it is. If you remember, for people who saw Django Unchained, the climax of this film, set in antebellum South on a fictitious slave enslavement camp, the culmination is not the white enslavers being killed and brutalized. The culmination is the death of the Uncle Tom. That's the type of thing that I mean in terms of really paying attention. White people are consistently pushing us in that direction. The nemesis from the Boondocks is not a white person, it's Uncle Ruckus. He comes in to make his comments and degrade black people. They encourage that sort of thing. And I think the caller, she mentioned, Steve Harvey. I'm working on a different, report right now, for Atlanta Black Star, where the Uncle Tom report is about racist jokes. And one of the things that I want to make sure I include in that report, the humor of white folks, racists in this environment, much of it is anti-black. It is degrading towards black people, really celebrating and showing the glee and the joy that they have about committing violence against the black people. This system is so pervasive that a lot of white humor is reflected in black humor. That's why you have black comedians who go out, and I say this, I worked at a black comedy club in Atlanta, no less, Chocolate City, the black Mecca. I worked in a black comedy club for over a year, and it was one white person that worked there the whole time I was there. So, I mean, this is like super, super black environment. The most crowded night for this club would be Sunday night, the Sabbath, the Lord's Day. People would go to church and then come to the comedy club that evening to sit around and bash and talk bad about black people. And I mean, it would be packed, not one white person in the building typically, to just sit around and just to crystallize, people would look forward. They would pay money to come and yell at other black people and say, move, B-I-T-C-H, get off the stage. They would pay money and do this ritualistically for well over a year. This is what I mean in terms of how we have been contaminated. We picked up so many of racist comments.
Well, Malcolm
racist
X warned us,
concepts.
Malcolm X warned us, didn't he? In that clip right there about integration, right? That's what you're talking about. I mean, he said
I'm not talking about integration. I'm just talking about the power of racist concepts. That's another term I try to be careful about. It doesn't even necessarily matter, because I just said there are no white people present where this is happening. Not one single white person.
Right.
It would be hundreds of people, all black,
But I bet they went to a school where they were educated or indoctrinated, I like to say, with a white supremacy curriculum. They watch white people TV all their lives, and I'm willing to bet. So I'm not shocked that it would produce that type of behavior, because that is the system. You just said how pervasive it is. And like Malcolm X said, you know, he tried to warn us, and yes, he did engage in name calling, but I'm sure as he grew, you know, he did speak on the incorrectness of engaging and always being courteous and whatnot, and not engaging in name calling. But, I mean, he said only a fool would allow his enemy to educate his children. And I've talked about this often. I was one of those first generations that was snatched out of his all black school with his all black teacher and all black friends and sent off across town to this white school. Okay. And so, you know, I think we had to recognize that, you know, Malcolm is right. All of this, what we're deeming as incorrect behavior, like black people paying money to go see black people make, you know, dirty, nasty jokes and about other black people. Well, they're products of that system.
Absolutely. And, as the point I really wanted to make sure that I got in with all of that is that that's what I expect. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not surprised. If it is a black person and they have all sorts of anti-black ideas, they're not interested in hearing anything that anybody on the Black Talk Radio Network has to say about anything. They have no interest in New Abolitionist Radio. I have no interest in hearing Mr. Reed try and tell us that we need to try to get on these juries and that slavery. I have no interest in that at all. I want to sit around and name call black people and, you know, do all of the things that we have been conditioned to do that make sure that this system of white supremacy is going to remain in place. That sort of conduct, that sort of thinking, I'm not surprised about it, and I'm not even angry about it. I think a lot of times when I hear non-white people expressing this frustration, they have a level of anger with these black people as though you're black. I think you were saying earlier when we were talking, you're a black person. You look like me, or, you know, you look like you could be my mom or my sister or whatever. I can't believe that you are behaving like this. You got to know what these white folks have been doing to us. And, oh my God, how could you do this sort of thing? I'm almost personally offended that you are doing this sort of thing and you're selling out our team. And I really try to get that message across consistently with folks that we have to have accurate expectations, realistic expectations about what we expect from other victims of racism, people that have been subjected to terrorism for centuries, their parents have, the impact that that has on them, even on a cellular level, the contamination of these concepts and the literal toxins, the poisons and everything that they're putting in the food and the environment and what have you. How do I think this person is going to function? Do I expect that this person has been listening to Black Talk Radio Network and Mr. Reed? Do I expect that this person has been listening to Amos Wilson and reading Assata Shakur? Probably not. So or at least for me, it would probably make sense to have some patience and not be ready to come out and criticize, as you said, do all that we can to try to deprogram this person, get them accurate information so they can maybe reflect and make some changes on the way that they're behaving and what they do, how they invest their time and energy. That, I think, is what we need to be striving for and moving away from. And it's a very popular concept. Racism, white supremacy is powerful, it is pervasive, and I insist that concept of hunting Uncle Tom's, that is a racist creation. It's very powerful. It's rooted, in my opinion, to that anti-blackness. There's so much enthusiasm for going after these Toms and thinking that's going to solve the problem. I have concluded nothing about that is going to improve our situation at all. I would simply ask for people to show evidence where hunting, going after these Uncle Toms, holding them accountable, that has improved things and made things better for black people.
You know, I can understand, because at one time I was there, and I would say in my 20s when I was listening to Public Enemy and Fight the Power, and I was like, damn, you Uncle Toms. You know what I'm saying? I'm ready to fight. You know what I'm saying? But as I grew older and as I matured and as I gained more understanding, it did not hurt me to see that, because I think people do feel personally hurt. I think black people tend to look at other black people as extended family. I think really the majority of black people actually do love other black people. And but we got a lot of dysfunction going on, and we don't always express it in the best ways. But I think really it is, they're taking it personal, and I've learned not to take it personal, and all the things you just explained, and you know, all the other reading and teachings and lectures I've listened to, the people help me understand why this person is behaving in this way. So I think that they are taking it personally, and that could, you know, have to do with age factor. That could have to do with level of maturity. But I think it does, it for some people, it does hurt. And I think that we do need to start looking at it from an intellectual and not emotional. You know what I'm saying? Cause I think that's where that comes from. That hurt is a feeling that describes an emotion. Hurt, you know what I'm saying? I think, you know, we operate best when we are not being emotional and instead being intellectual. I want to go to another caller. Area code 619. Thank you for calling in and holding on patiently. Go ahead with your question or comment. 619?
Yes.
Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. You know, I wanted to speak long before this.
I'm sorry.
And so there's been so much that you know that's fruitful that you guys have been talking about. But, you know, I agree that nonviolence with, I don't call them Uncle Tom's, I call them Negropeans. And
could you repeat that?
Negropeans.
Negropeans, playing off of Europeans. Okay, I understand. I heard you.
That violence is not the way, but we have to address it from a multi-pronged approach. In our churches, we support white supremacy. And a core of us have such a deep, strong belief in those limiting beliefs that come with the traditional black religion, that it gets in the way of any real critical thinking. And our schools produce the same thing. And once we get into the university level, we're groomed to be perfect Negropeans. And when we get promotions and we're paid a salary, all of a sudden things change and our desire and our passion is neutralized, and we begin to accept some of the things that are going on without seeing how it hurts us as a collective. And you can look at Facebook. I can post something, and if it is overwhelming for them, you'll have people sometimes say things like, I'm waiting for more data. Has that been fact-checked? Could they be lying about O'Reilly in his physical violence with his wife, you know, in a custody suit? Black folks is who they concentrate on lying to, not people like Bill O'Reilly. So, you know, I just think that it's large. I mean, we have to look at school. We really have to look at,
I would say, all nine areas of people activity that Neely Fuller defines.
Well, you know, the critical thinking piece, mm-hmm. which K through 12 they attack. So it makes it easier to go along to get along. So that those of us who speak and who know what's really going on and begin to understand male white privilege and white supremacy and see it as the finely tuned machine that it has become, in part because of integration, but it's gone beyond that. So when people get some semblance of Eurocentric success, all of a sudden things don't seem as urgent as they might have seemed before.
Because they're not living in the neighborhood of Baltimore, in Baltimore where Freddie Gray was living. They're living out somewhere like where I live, you know, in the suburbs.
But yes, in the suburbs, because I lived in Baltimore also. And I come from St. Louis, and I grew up in San Diego, California, which is very, very white bread.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a clear delineation between the haves and have-nots. And the haves don't necessarily mean just white folks. There are plenty of black folks that have realized some success that are a part of that system. So they're happy when their kids say, you know, there's nobody that's been college educated, and then all of a sudden you have a child that can go to college.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not looking at any of the other ramifications. You just send them there. And if they have problems, if they have challenges, it's got to be about them being stupid or not capable rather than the system that they're going into that they're not prepared to go to. And unfortunately, when we graduate from these systems, we're given information that doesn't necessarily cause us to thrive. When you talk to people, and I was one of them, that you're the only one in the class of 165, and there are things that are said, and you have no way of getting support. I worked in law enforcement, probation for 25 years. Was an armed officer in gangs. And it was only then that I realized that everybody wasn't raised the way I was. And once I got there, I was sympathetic and compassionate about the people that I worked with, the clients, and saw
you mean the people in the community that you were patrolling
as a way of keeping us out.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're a conscious person in a bureaucracy,
mm-hmm.
If you have not developed a community, it will eat you alive. And when I left there, the most painful thing was the experience of having backs turned on me that looked like me.
Mm.
White folks are predictable. Their behavior is predictable. But when black folks can't support one another and advance an agenda and can't do the spook who sat by the door routine, it's very, very hard. And I've noticed that many people who retire with a huge skill set are weary, are tired, and bitter. So they can't contribute to the health of our community. So I just think that we've got to look beyond just the violent thing. I mean, the church, our unwillingness to volunteer, our unwillingness to adopt children that don't have fathers, our unwillingness to hold accountable people, especially men who don't respect the elders or don't respect women, that we don't start teaching our children when they're very young. If it's not in our immediate family, we don't have any concern about it. That is a very Eurocentric way of being. That doesn't speak anything to the whole notion that came from Africa, Indians too, about relationships and building relationships. So I just think that there's a lot of work we have in front of us, and the fact that we don't read, that we take shortcuts and listen to CNN and Fox and all that kind of crap with stuff that, and take that as fact, and take that as gospel. Because we don't use our critical thinking capacities any longer. And we're at a place of urgency. Really, honestly, because there's a lot of black folks that have become Negropeans. And I'm not talking about poor folks. I'm talking about people who have quote unquote made it. And it has neutralized them. So their concern is more about those of us who speak, about white supremacy or white male privilege. And they don't even understand the notion of it. They won't even bother to look for the definition of what a Negropean is or cognitive dissonance. They don't read Amos Wilson. They don't read Francis Quest Welsing. They don't read the post-traumatic slave syndrome. So they don't understand, and they go along with these notions and raise their children to be that way, and they raise their children, and that's the reason why we're in the situation that we're in now.
And I
glorifying people like Al Sharpton. We don't have a leader. I watched films, 1986 of Malcolm X. I had been in a car accident. The Pan-African Association had given me some films, and I sat there then, and a tear came out of my eye, and I said, where are the Malcolms? Where are the Mount Martin Luther Kings? Will we ever have that quality, that kind of man again?
I believe so.
At the time, I felt we wouldn't, and I really don't think it now.
I believe so, and I do have to get ready to wrap up, and I appreciate you expressing your views and sharing information. Caller, we got Tando Radio Show coming on here in just about 11 minutes, and so I got to get ready to wind it down. But many of the problems that you just talked about, I think that myself and Gus talked about how pervasive racism, white supremacy is, and you laid it out, education, through entertainment. They control everything. And like you said, they're not reading Amos Wilson. They're not, reading, Black Agenda Report. They're not doing it. That's because they don't know about it. They don't know about these outlets. Okay. And they're not going to turn on white people's controlled media and have ready access, like that. And I think the reason I said that I think we have hope for a future is because of the new technology that we are using right now and using it to produce programs like The Context of White Supremacy, like Race Treaty, like New Abolitionist Radio, like Political Prisoner Radio. Slowly by slowly, we are reaching people, and those people are hearing what is being shared. The information is being shared, and then they're telling other people, and they're telling other people. And it's just a slow process for us right now because we don't have the infrastructure right now to reach an audience like a NBC station. You know what I'm saying? Mainstream media. They got the channels on lockdown and whatnot. But we are, I think, reaching enough people. And I think that's manifested in the Black Lives Matters movement. When I was reading the other day that Asada Shakur, a lot of these kids is wearing shirts that say, Asada taught me, and not some racist suspect or somebody like that. And I think because we now have more access to information than we may have had in the past, that this will give rise to, quote unquote, another Harriet Tubman, another Frederick Douglass, another Malcolm X, another Martin Luther King, and what we call, quote unquote, leaders. But I just call them people of conscience who lead. They're not necessarily leaders, but I call them teachers. So I am hopeful for the future. From some of the things I've been seeing. Gus, did you have any, let me see how much time we got. We got about, actually 6 minutes. I'm gonna let you have that last 6 minutes, Gus, to say anything you would like to say if you want to respond to what the caller said or anything else. And please, again, let people know how they can, tune in to The Context of White Supremacy's, radio station.
Oh, for sure. Thank Mr. Reed for the opportunity for the exchange of views today. Hope it has been constructive for folks who listened in. If I have not been clear or added to any confusion, my apologies. I'm a victim of racism and I'm still learning. You can feel free to drop me a line here at the Black Talk Radio Network or on Twitter at Until Justice if you need any clarification or if I misspoke or if you just have a question you want to address something that we covered today. That being said, oh, and make sure folks invest, support Black Talk Radio Network. That definitely is allowing the cows to continue to broadcast. I think a lot of folks have found the program just since we've been a part of the Black Talk Radio Network. So definitely invest and support Mr. Scotty Reed's work and the work of the Black Talk Radio Network. That being said, to the caller's points, I think, Mr. Reed is correct. I think, we touched on some of the issues that she submitted. I was paying attention when she was giving some of her responses, and I guess two things that I would point to, where she was saying she, I'll paraphrase, kind of lost hope that we would have other Black people. I think she used the term leaders, like Minister Malcolm X or Dr. King or Ella Baker or whomever else, Fannie Lou Hamer, to have the next generation of folks like that. And I think it's constructive. I think it's important if we're going to solve this problem, that the best black people to go out and fight against racism, that they have not taken the court yet. That's the way that I think. And the reason that I think that way is that if this problem is going to be solved, the black people who are absolutely brilliant and best at fighting against racism, we haven't even seen them yet. If we're going to solve this problem, we're going to have to make massive improvements in our behavior, massive improvements in our understanding of racism, white supremacy, and the bar, not just being that I want to be the next Malcolm X, but I want to be the one that solves this problem and can give some credit to Minister Malcolm and Assata Shakur and all the other numerous black people all around the world who have contributed to trying to help us get to the point of solving this problem. But eventually, that contribution and their efforts are going to produce the black people who are going to solve this problem. That's one. The second point, I try to pay attention when folks are sharing their views on racism. I think it's important, and I concluded the report that we've been kind of talking about today about hunting Uncle Tom's. I think it's important. In fact, I think it's revolutionary when we see black people. I think the female caller that just dialed in, where she was talking about some of the black people that might have quote unquote made it. Maybe they have a relatively okay job and they're relatively stable financially. They have been given a little bit of cornbread, as we might say, with enslavement.
Butter biscuits.
Exactly. And they don't want to lose that. Hey, I'm comfortable. Forget all that. I'm not trying to talk about all that. I'm in a good position and I'm going to raise my offspring, my children, to function in the same way so that they don't have accurate information. I think it's important and I think it's accurate to view that as victimization. These are black people that have been harmed. These are black people that have been reared in such a way and really contaminated in such a way that they do not have black self-respect. They have been harmed in such a way that they can't even share that regard, that respect, that dignity with their offspring. They don't understand that war is being waged against us. These folks are victims. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to love them. That doesn't mean that you have to like them. That doesn't mean that you have to move in with them and give them a hug every day. But I do think that it's critical, it's important, and it's truthful to recognize that this is what the system of white supremacy is designed to do, to produce black people who function in a way that is going to totally support black destruction. That is the goal. That is the aim of what white people are doing to us. And those of us who have that information, to do everything that we possibly can to share that info with other people and to do as much as we possibly can to improve ourselves. I think that's what I ended with in the piece, and that'll be the sentiment I conclude with today. I think if we took a lot of that same zeal and energy that we have in talking about black people that we're frustrated with, black people that might be responding to racism, white supremacy in a way that we don't agree with, if we took that focus and applied it to ourselves, what am I doing incorrect? What am I doing that I need to improve on? What am I doing that can be 1,000 times better by next week or next month or next year in whatever I'm doing to try to put racist man and racist woman out of business? I think that would send us in a much better direction and would produce dramatic improvements. If we're going to start that list of critiquing and scrutinizing and criticizing black people, let's pull out that mirror and start critiquing the black reflection looking back at us. I think that'll get us some immediate results. And I'll stop there. Thank you again, Mr. Reed.
All right. Well, thank you, Gus, and hope that you will come back to the program. I think the program was constructive. I do have some clarification, and like you always say, I hope it was constructive for the listeners as well. Just want to let the listeners know, immediately following this broadcast coming up here in a couple of minutes, will be Tando Radio Show. They will be talking about politics, the politics of climate change, and how it is being now declared a national security issue. And they will continue their conversation about the theoretical Planet X, which the last broadcast, they said, you know, has been found, and then NASA confirmed the finding of quote unquote Planet X. So stay tuned for a Tando radio show. Again, make sure y'all check out the context of white supremacy. If you are subscribed to the network, blacktalkradionetwork.com. If you're on Facebook, Black Talk Radio Network, whenever a program by any of our media partners is posted, it will populate on the website, of course, and out through our social media accounts. So that's one way you could keep up with it. And also you can find information on their broadcast page on the network, which is blacktalkradionetwork.com/the context of white supremacy. All right, this is Scotty Reed signing off. Thanks to all who called in. Thanks again to our guest, Mr. Gus T. Renegade. I will be back on air tomorrow, once again at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern.
Yeah, consumerism's run through them like a tumor in them. Ageism, sexism, racism, chauvinism. Capitalism running through them like the rumor business. Separatism, skepticism, modernism, atheism. Television running through them like an organism. Mechanism, despotism, poison in the ecosystem. Satanism running through them like a politician. Hedonism, hypocrisy, nihilism, narcissism. Egotism running through them, needing exorcism. Situation, heathenism, adversary,